When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Rightio, let's talk some motor racing and let's get seriously into it, because the IndyCar are two events down the season, plus the exhibition racing event, the $1 million challenge. Scott Dixon, of course, won the Grand Prix of Long Beach yesterday with a brilliant drive for a second top 10 finish in the two starts, finishing ninth in the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg to get things underway. Finished the season last year in second place between teammate Alex Palou. Now let's welcome in Greg Rust to talk us through this, because we don't give him enough kudos. I don't believe, and Greg might agree with that, he might not, but he certainly, certainly when he wins, that he hits the headlines as such, but overall his consistency is magnificent. So Greg's with us now, motorsports journalist and presenter from Rusty's Garage podcast. Greg, good morning to you.
Smithy, g'day. We should catch up more often, you and I. We're in a nice part of the world in the Hawke's Bay, and you're absolutely right what you said in your introduction around Scott Dixon. He doesn't get enough credit at times, in my opinion, for what he's done. I mean, to think that at age 43, he is still winning races in one of the toughest motorsport championships in the world. It is so competitive in IndyCar right now. And yes, a few cars went their way yesterday, but what he did from a fuel-saving standpoint really set that up, and it just shows what a quality athlete he is even now.
It was wonderful how this unfolded yesterday. I was able to watch it, and I've got to confess, I probably would have been watching Scheffler and the PGA at the same time, but I was so glad that I wasn't. I was so glad that I was able to tune in, because to hear the commentators talk about this guy's ability to manage petrol reserves against tyres, against speed, was quite fascinating how they described it.
Yeah, and his rivals, I mean, they're the two big powerhouse teams. So he drives for Chip Ganassi's squad and Roger Penske's team. They were coming at him at one point there, and it looked as though his lead might ultimately be whittled away by a rival strategy, if you will. And there was a bit of an incident that happened behind him, but, I mean, he still set things up with that fuel saving by driving with real smarts. He's able to think on the run, you know, like he can read the race, and there are a few of them that are like that have that innate ability at insane speeds, you know, when you've got concrete walls, right beside you. I mean, it's fearsome stuff, and yet it's almost like child's play to him. He can understand, okay, they're on a different strategy. How can we compete against that? What can we do to counter that, and so on. And, I just hope now that we're about to venture into the mad month of May almost. They're at another race meeting this weekend, and then after that it is pretty much all about the build-up to the famous Indianapolis 500 at the end of May. And I just hope that all the stuff you've detailed in the introduction continues as we get to, you know, what really is one of the world's great races every year, just like the Monaco Grand Prix. It's the greatest spectacle in motor racing, the Indianapolis 500.
Greg, one of the other things that he was quick to acknowledge was his dedication after the race to Sir Colin Gilltrap, which is another measure of Scott Dixon, because God knows what the adrenaline would be like going through the body and through the brain. But one of the first things he said, and it shows just what he's like, was to acknowledge one of of his great supporters.
Yep, there were two things that sort of happened there. The lead commentator for NBC is a long-time friend and colleague of mine, Lee Diffie, and he mentioned in the commentary as Scott crossed the line about Sir Colin. Lee was acutely aware here that in New Zealand we had a moment's silence on the grid of supercars to remember a man who'd done so much for New Zealand sports people, but particularly around motor racing, his great love. And obviously, you know, in the very early part of Scott's career, You know, he helps significantly, and that's something that Scott, because of the person he is, has never forgotten. So no surprise at all to see Scott get out and to dedicate that win yesterday to Sir Colin. Just a remarkable man who, you know, when you walk into their offices there in Auckland and you see the various bits of memorabilia from all the different drivers in motorsport that the Giltrap Group and Sir Colin have assisted over the years, they have this array of stars in the sport, but they've all got to have come from somewhere. We're very fortunate in this country that there are people like Sir Colin and championed by Sir Colin that have created this pathway in some respects to assist these young people, because it's a very difficult thing, as you know, to get the right funding and support as you're learning and climbing the ladder. Sorry, my dogs are barking here at home. Apologies.
That's cool. No problem at all. We like all the atmosphere, mate. Hey, Greg, now before we finish on this fellow, Scott Dixon, where does he stand in motor racing history in New Zealand now? We've had a hell of a history in Formula One, of course. We've had drivers in a lot of championships around the world and rally, etc. Where do you put Scott Dixon? Can you put him at the top? Can you put him in the top one, two, three?
Correct. I mean, for me, he's absolutely right up there. I mean, there'll be people probably listening to your radio show this morning that will say, oh, yeah, but, you know, he whatever. You know, he didn't go off and conquer Formula One. But what he's done in that North American scene, which is, as I said before, ultra-competitive. I mean, he is genuinely one of the best drivers in the world. And should be remembered as such, not just for the statistics, but for the longevity. You know, he'll go into the Indy 500 at the end of May as a serious contender again for that great race. And you know what he's done. It's going to be a tough championship this, but he'll be in the mix based on what we've seen so far at the pointy end of this season again and fighting for that crown. Really, really impressive stuff. And it's little wonder that you see, you know, his great friend like Dario Franchitti, who had an amazing career in IndyCar. He was one of the first to come and speak with him yesterday. Little wonder that he's ended up with, you know, one of the best teams in world motorsport. And, you know, we also probably need to remember here that loyalty is a big part of that. He's been incredibly loyal to that team along the way. And when you look at some of the youngsters that have come through that team, you know, they benefit from what he's done and continues to do at Chip Ganassi Racing.
Scott McLaughlin, not such a happy day yesterday, but he is going to Alabama where he won last year. That's good for him.
Yeah, I mean, Long Beach is a legendary place, and while that didn't necessarily go to plan, I think he's... it did hurt him in that closely fought Drivers' Championship ladder, just given how early in the season we are. I think he dropped seven slots yesterday down to 10th in the standings. But you know what? You're right. He will trade on what he did at this place. That's a great track there. The memorabilia and the history that they've preserved around their place, it's something you've got to see to believe. And I think, you know, in his third season, he's taken another step again. We've got to remember that he's come from a background that doesn't have a lot of open wheel racing at all. I mean, he was so good in a supercar at Bathurst and in the championship in Australia. But Roger Penske saw something immensely special in Scott. They've given him the time, they've given him the framework to learn IndyCar and to learn how... I mean, it's so difficult when you start racing on ovals. A lot of listeners might just think, oh, well, it's, you know, to the untrained, it's boring. You're just going round and round in circles. Well, let me tell you, that is absolutely not the case. And a place like Indianapolis, for example, which on paper looks quite simple and like you would just tackle it flat out, is very, very, very difficult to do indeed, let alone the strategy component of the racing. So he's come on in leaps and bounds. He'll be a factor again this year, and he showed the way the championship wrapped up in 2023, why he rightly should be there.
And just finally, before we leave IndyCar, of course, Marcus Armstrong making up the Kiwi trifecta there. quiet start to the season for him, a 12th place at Long Beach, but he's out of rookie status now. How do you see his season shaping up?
I just think what he did last year really turned a lot of heads in that IndyCar paddock. I mean, he'd immersed himself in the European racing scene, and that had been his way of life since he was a teenager. So it's quite a significant shift for him. And he eased his way in with a very good team, you know, had a good foundation where he didn't sort of bite off more than he could chew, if you like, in the first year. And everyone really sat up and took note of the way that he approached that season. So, again, I think he'll continue to build as the year goes on, his second season. But probably the thing to bear in mind, the little caveat there, is it is just so competitive in that sport now. I mean, even one of the guys that, you know, he would have known from his time racing in Formula 2, for example, in Teo Porcher. I mean, he's gone over and was competing last weekend at Long Beach there. So, I mean, it's got this collection of racers from all around the world. Some of them have got experience that would have perhaps at one point had them on the trajectory to go toward Formula 1. They've made a change of tact and they've gone there. But that doesn't mean to me, it doesn't seem like a fallback position just because it is so intensely competitive. So, yeah, he applied himself the right way last year, and I think he'll continue to build this season.
Let's hop across to NASCAR, if we could, Greg, because, of course, we've got a vested interest now with Shane Van Gisbergen, who finished down the pack in his first race yesterday. But at three stages during the race, he was actually leading.
And that's the thing I think people have walked away again. I mean, firstly, legendary racetrack, very different to the venue where he absolutely blew everyone away last year at Chicago. I mean, against the caliber of those drivers in that sport as a newcomer, what he did in Chicago last year made everyone sit up and take note. But they're all acutely aware that, and especially Shane, that this is just going to be a huge learning year for him with, you know, getting your head around oval track competition and the way that you have to tackle it and so on. So while the end result doesn't reflect it, for me, the exactly what you just said, I mean, the fact that there were moments in the different stages where he was leading, I think they're real positive things. He's a competitive guy, so he'll probably sit back and mark quite hard. But he's going there at the right time of life with some great experience under the belt. It's probably in some respects, now that we're seeing his you know, his rival and colleague, if you like, and Cam Waters dabbling in a few races now and so on, and we've seen Brody Kostecki do a bit of that too. It just does show you the talent pool at the pointy end of supercars and how you know, they can adapt from that potentially to NASCAR. But again, like McLaughlin, as we were reflecting a minute ago, and even Marcus Armstrong, I mean, that's ultra-competitive environment, but I think it's one that Shane is thriving in. He's really, really enjoying the new chapter and the new challenge.
Well, I didn't realise until this morning is that Michael Jordan owns a team on the circuit, the aptly named 23XI. He was also there yesterday at Talladega, and they won it with driver Tyler Reddick.
They've got he's moved into that scene in, you know, relatively recent years. It's not uncommon to find singers and rap artists and what have you that have got a connection to it as well. So I mean, it's got that star power. They're running a Netflix series of their own now, which has actually been very well received. Drive to Survive, but led the way with Formula One, is what they've endeavoured to, I wouldn't say copy, because they've done it in their own style, in their own way, but it's been very good at unmasking these drivers and letting people see a bit more of them and the backstories that you're talking about. I mean, to think that it entices someone like Jordan, who clearly enjoys the racing, but also brings those corporate connections and what have you, just tells you how big that sport is in America.
Rightio, well, very close to Hawke's Bay here, actually, just a couple of hours over the Taupo Napier Road at 80k, I'm sure, Greg. Here's 57,000 people, they say, turned up to this event over the weekend, and it was interesting to see Tony Quinn point the finger and not the, not the not just the media about to the people that said this can't be done. He's done it.
Yep. I spent the better part of the weekend with their core team working on different things. So I was regularly with Tony, and the first time that he kind of publicly talked about what you've just said was at the end of things on Sunday. He was very chuffed with what they'd done. He's the kind of human being that, you know, providing all the facts stack up, you don't really tell Tony Quinn you can't do that, because that just motivates him to prove you wrong in some ways. The people of Taupō, the government, supercars, the drivers themselves, the way everyone embraced this thing, the fans and the volunteers and so on. I mean, it was an unreal weekend. The regional constituency, if you like, pulled it off. They did it so well, and it was a good shot in the arm for the sport, because they began the year, they were meant to be starting in Newcastle, in sort of north of Sydney there, and that event basically fell over at the end of last year. There was some things there with local shop owners and council and so on, and the backup decision was to start the season at Bathurst. And most fans feel like Bathurst should be reserved as the jewel that it is every October for the 1000, and we shouldn't go there more than that. So it was a bit lackluster, the start to the year. Fans couldn't get up close to the cars at the Grand Prix for various reasons. So this was a massive shot in the arm. It was huge for the sport. The turnout, I mean, there were people still leaving the track on Sunday night at about 6:45. So the queue of cars getting out of there, and everyone was just buzzing. So great for the drivers and teams. They can't wait to come back and do it again. We clearly, missed that regular date on the calendar that we had with Pukekohe. So that the starvation, if you like, for New Zealand fans was very, very evident there. And they all did the right thing and came and enjoyed some great racing. Even in that pouring rain on Saturday, they were there. They were so hearty and in voice. So, yeah, it was just an awesome weekend for all sorts of different reasons. And to see Andre Heimgartner on Saturday win that first race there. He drives with the same number that the late, great Jason Richards had. Jason's family were there in the garage at Brad Jones Racing. Brad Jones, of course, ran JR for many years, and he has a very special place in their hearts. So there was a little bit of meant to be in my eyes. You don't often see that in sport, as you know, but it was sort of felt meant to be on Saturday. So, and then separately for some of the other Kiwis, there were some good positives. I felt for young Ryan Wood, who's come in with a big opportunity. He's been sort of accelerated along the pathway and driving there now at Walkinshaw Andretti United. He had a really good weekend, and that is going to be a good platform for him to build on for the rest of the year now. I reckon there were some very, very positive things for him and for the Kiwis generally over the weekend.
How easy will it be to replace Shane van Gisbergen for supercars? Is there a logical, absolute standout replacement coming through, or is it going to be better for the sport that there isn't, in fact?
It's a very hard thing to describe. Shane is a freakish talent for all sorts of reasons, and I think he would actually be the first to tell you that you know, whoever the person is that shines from this side of the ditch in his absence would do it on their own merit, not just as someone we think of as Shane's replacement, if you will. The natural thought at the moment probably is Matt Payne. For him to win on the streets of Adelaide so early in his supercars career, he's got a great team that are coming on in leaps and bounds. He's got an enormous talent, that young driver. He's a very good friend of Liam Lawson's, for example. The two of them, little wonder, they've gone their own direction with their careers, but little wonder both of them are shining. But, I mean, it's more than that. It's for me personally, it's so great to see Richie Stanaway getting another shot at things, and that'll get better as the season goes on. He's kept chipping away at it and putting good points in the bank, even if the race results haven't always been top of the pops just yet. It was great for Andre Heimgartner and Brad Jones, as I said. So I think there's a really good, in the wake of what Shane did, and then you could argue even Greg Murphy and others before him, there is a great wave of of Kiwi races and supercars. And let me tell you, beyond that, coming through Porsche and so on, there is another wave of kids. We've got some very, very good talent that will inspire the next generation and that are following in the footsteps of those like Shane van Gisbergen. And the stocks of Kiwi drivers headed down that path at the moment is very, very solid indeed.
And just finally, Greg, you mentioned Liam Lawson in there. Where are we at? Where is Liam at with his arrangements in Formula One? And how long does he have to remain patient here?
I think a lot of people are trying to join the dots and say that Daniel Ricciardo is on borrowed time. Now, I don't subscribe to that. He brings something to, and that actually, incidentally, my viewpoint that I've just shared with you there is at complete odds with my good friend and your SEN colleague, Cam Vandenhagen, who does the Gridwalk show on Sunday nights. He feels like there's maximum pressure on Dan at the moment. I don't subscribe to that. I feel like that team are drawing on Daniel's experience to shape the car and to help them move forward with the package. And he brings a lot of experience in that regard. And the unfortunate knock-on of that is it means that Liam, for now, is sort of waiting in the wings. But I was very fortunate to be working in a broadcasting capacity at Singapore last year to see what he did when he was thrust into the limelight like that with Daniel injured and, you know, it started at the Dutch race, straight into the car for qualifying effectively, very limited time. And he absolutely proved not just to that team, but to the whole sport that he deserves to be on the grid on a full-time basis. And it is kind of a crime that isn't happening right now, but we're in for a big shake-up at the end of this season. There are 13 drivers who are off contract in Formula One at the end of this season, and there's going to be quite a merry-go-round. But I think one thing that is clear, the Red Bull group know they have something special there. We've seen that under pressure, how he can perform and deliver. It doesn't get any tougher than that sort of debut. And Red Bull are incredibly hard markers. So little wonder, I think, wherever he ultimately ends up, that they'll kind of fence him in because he's hot property.
Greg, absolutely fantastic to catch up with you. You've got that successful podcast, of course, Rusty's Garage. We urge people to follow you on that. And honestly, you've just absolutely filled our book with knowledge there across the board. So we appreciate your time and your background information there. It's been great chatting, mate.
It's been great to catch up. And let's do that more than just when we see each other for the Melbourne Cup. You look after yourself, all right?
Cheers, Greg. Will do.